We'll therefore move to the next case on our docket this morning, which is number 063918, the United States against Iron Matthews. Mr. Diamond Falk.
Your Honors, Nathan Diamond Falk for the defendant appellant, Iron Matthews. The issue in this case is fairly simple. Whether the definition of possession instruction that was given by Judge Kennelly in the case below accurately stated the law of possession in the Seventh Circuit. We believe that the definition of possession given by Judge Kennelly in this case, based on the facts of this case, did not apply the law of the Seventh Circuit in the case. Possession in this case should be defined as momentarily holding an object as long as an individual does so knowingly, and given the facts of this case, that the firearm must be loaded and operable.
Mr. Diamond Falk.
Yes, Judge.
I love saying that because my maiden name was Diamond. Can you?
Well, my maiden name was Falk, so I.
can you point to any case in which a court included in the instruction a requirement that the gun be loaded?
Well, I think what we confuse here, if I may, is the definition of possession and an elements instruction that may or may not be given in order to find someone guilty of the crime of felon in possession. The case of Hendricks, which was cited in the brief, overruled the case of United States versus Kitchen. And if you analyze the way the law evolved in regards to possession, starting with the case of United States versus Kitchen, you can see why Matthews below requested that the additional definitional phrase, loaded and operable, be included. Kitchen was a drug case where this court ruled that momentary possession of an object, i.e. a controlled substance, was not sufficient to establish possession. What then happened was, in the case of United States versus Hendricks, Hendricks overruled Kitchen and determined that because a firearm has an entirely different character than an object such as a packet of drugs, that momentary possession of a firearm would be sufficient, or momentarily touching a firearm would be sufficient to establish possession, where under Kitchen, momentary touching of an object such as a packet of drugs would not establish possession. And the rationale in Hendricks that was later followed in Lane, as cited in my brief, was that because a weapon has this distinctive character of dangerousness in and of itself when it's loaded, that momentarily possessing a weapon would be sufficient to establish possession because of this, the characteristic of the weapon being loaded.
Do you think our...
That's not the only rationale, though.
No, it is not. And you're absolutely right, Judge. That is not the only rationale.
That's the problem I have with your argument.
Well, if you look at, for example, Lane, In Lane, there were other factors that the court took into consideration in determining whether the momentary touching of a weapon would be enough to establish possession. And in Lane, the court determined, if I may, that the fact that Lane was buying the gun, negotiated for the gun, and even though he only had possession of the weapon in examining it, he was in fact purchasing the weapon. That is distinctly different than what happened in this case. In this case, the facts establish that Mr. Matthews was merely a middleman. And in fact, he stated that position numerous times to the ATF agents who were looking to, who were selling him the weapons in question. He said, "I'm the middleman.
Yes.
I'm doing this for somebody else." And in fact, when the agent, when the buy was taking place in the Walgreens parking lot, the agent said to Mr. Matthews, "Well, you don't have any," because Matthews had said, "Well, I don't have any money. I don't have any drugs. My guy is coming later with those items, the man who's going to purchase the items." And the agent said to him, "Well, don't you want to take the guns now? Don't you have anything you can give me to purchase or to a value for these weapons?" And he says, "No, I'm not purchasing these guns. I'm just looking at them for my guy."
Is it your view that on this issue, the law in our circuit is in conflict with itself?
Yes. Yes, and I think that
in other words, Hendricks vis-a-vis Lane.
Yes, it is. And the government, well, yes, the answer is yes, and I don't think there's any other way to state it.
I'm going to ask the government about Hendricks because they did not respond to your argument on Hendricks, it seems to me.
Well, if your honors don't have any further questions, I mean, my argument is set out in my brief. I would respond to arguments, but I'd like to reserve, I think I have about 2 minutes left for rebuttal. Would that be okay?
Apparently there are no other questions, sir. Thank you.
Pardon me, Judge?
Apparently there are no other questions, so you may reserve the balance of your time.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. I appreciate the time.
We'll hear now from Mr. Nagel.
May it please the Court, my name is Patrick Nagel and I represent the United States, the appellee in this matter. The District Court properly instructed the jury about the elements required to convict the defendant of being a felon in possession of a firearm. The District Court also properly instructed the jury regarding the element, regarding the definition of possession. The District Court did not abuse its discretion when the District Court rejected the defendant's proposed jury instruction language that the firearm had to be loaded and operable in order to be possessed.
Mr. Nagel, what do you do with the argument, though, that the nature of the transaction here really didn't require this defendant to touch that weapon? He only did so when he was invited to do it. He was just the buyer. He was just the agent who was showing up to make sure that things were set up for someone else who was going to come and make the buy.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the defendant's characterization of the facts could use a little bit more explanation in that in this case, the defendant in this case had previously negotiated to buy a firearm and through the course of events ended up agreeing to purchase three firearms. Drove to and met undercover ATF agents at a Walgreens parking lot with the express purpose of going there to inspect the guns to determine whether or not these are guns that he could use, quote, on the block. Guns that he was planning on purchasing in exchange for crack cocaine. Now, in this particular case, when he showed up in the parking lot, he goes to the car, he opens the trunk, he reaches under, pulls each gun out individually and inspects them and handles them and holds them, comments on whether or not they're quality guns or not quality guns, puts them down and says, yeah, we'll make the deal. Now, in this case, he was then going to obtain crack cocaine from another source and then purchase the guns and leave with the guns.
Let's say I went to Tiffany's and I said, I have a friend who wants to buy this 10-carat diamond ring, and I'm the agent, and can I see that ring? And I handled it, and I tried it on, and I slobbered over it.
If that ring were a firearm in this jurisdiction, Your Honor, this court has held that holding a firearm constitutes possession as a matter of law.
Tell me this. Why did you not respond to the Hendricks argument?
Well, Your Honor, the Hendricks argument, the Hendricks case itself, revolved around the question of whether the jury instruction could include the term momentary handling of a firearm. In other words, in our case, we had proposed the Hendricks jury instruction to the district court. The district court chose not to use our version, which was the Hendricks version, which has been approved by this court. Instead, the district court took out that phrase, momentary handling of a gun, language which was actually more favorable to the government than the jury instruction that we ended up with, which didn't refer to, you know, the length of time that someone had to hold a gun in order for it to be possession. So the defendant's argument regarding whether a gun is loaded and operable was not discussed in Hendricks. It was not part of the Hendricks instruction, and the Hendricks court didn't rule on that. And in fact, the statute itself, 18 U.S.C. 922 G1, clearly states that a firearm, that it's illegal for a prohibited felon to possess either a firearm or ammunition, not a loaded firearm. And in fact, a firearm is defined in 18 U.S.C. 921 for purposes of the statute as referring to a weapon that can or that could be or could be converted into use for expelling an object to fire, and includes, among other things, a silencer. A silencer, for purposes of the statute alone, if the defendant were to hold, would constitute a firearm, and he would be a prohibited felon.
So sure. Under your theory, could a defendant be found guilty of possession if a friend was simply showing him a gun and he held it momentarily?
Yes, Your Honor.
That, under your theory?
Under this court's previous case law, yes.
Mr. Nagel, going back to the facts of our case before us today, if dangerousness is the touchstone of our analysis of firearm cases, how was this particular situation dangerous, as we've used that word in other cases?
Well, Your Honor, in the Lane case, this court discussed the notion of dangerousness, and in particular, the statutory intent by Congress behind this. And what the court concluded was that Congress's intent was to prevent felons from exercising any physical control over a gun, because guns are inherently so dangerous. And as Judge Cannelli pointed out during jury instructions, just because a gun is unloaded when handed to someone doesn't mean they couldn't pull out a clip and stick it in this case, the fully automatic MAC machine gun, and start using it. This court has found in previous cases that, for example, in the Lane case itself, there was no finding in the Lane case that the firearm was loaded. In fact, the facts of that case tend to indicate that it wasn't. Similar to this case, that case involved an individual who was purchasing a gun from someone else, only in that case, under more innocuous circumstances, it was for his wife, not for his gang. And in that case, this court held that his holding of that gun to inspect it and then subsequently having it put in a box and giving it to his wife constituted possession.
Girlfriend.
And in that case, actually cited sister cases for clarification. Those two cases from other circuits discussed situations in which a person went to a gun store, purchased a gun, was handed a gun in a box, which would be an unloaded gun, walked back to their car, put it in their car, and that was possession.
So is Jones your best case, do you think?
I think Lane, the two sister cases discussed, and even the Bugs case from the circuit discusses that the gun not be fireable, just that, you know, that it be a weapon that could be fired.
So you see no conflict at all in our case law?
I don't, Your Honor, because there is no case law the defendant has cited, nor is there any legal authority, which I found, which says that a firearm must be loaded in order to meet the definition of possession for purposes of this statute.
Mr. Nagel, is our case law, does it sit comfortably with the case law of the other circuits, or is our approach somewhat different than that of the other circuits?
Your Honor, our case law is conforms with the case law of other jurisdictions. I have not found any jurisdiction which has said that a firearm has to be loaded in order to be possessed.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nagel. And how much time does Mr. Diamond Falk have? Thank you.
Thank you. I think Your Honors have focused on the issue in this case. And the issue that I think Your Honors have focused on, i.e., whether possession includes not only loaded and ready to use, but also there are a variety of other factors that when the courts have discussed what constitutes possession in a legal sense, the courts have taken these other factors into possession, into consideration when they discuss possession. In this particular case, though, and under the facts of this case, it was Matthews' argument below that in order under the case law that was present in Lane and Hendricks, and given the court's rationale for determining possession in those cases, that given the fact that in the Matthews case, the gun was not loaded, was not able to be fired, there was no ammunition available, and in fact, all of the participants in this particular transaction, with the exception of Iron Matthews, were all agents of the government. So, in this particular case, the dangerousness aspect of possession was not considered by the court and was not considered by the court in its instruction. And that is why we are asking that this court grant Mr. Matthews a new trial. Thank you, Your Honors.
The only issue before us is whether the instruction has got to include loaded, though. Is that right?
That is the issue. And under the facts of this case, whether it has to include loaded. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Diamond Falk. Mr. Diamond Falk, you served by appointment to this court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for your fine efforts on behalf of your client today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And our thanks to all counsel of the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.